So, is this a good news story or is this a bad news story? Every one of us needs to answer that question. Is this a good news story or is this a bad news story? Last year, Tevis and I went over to Vancouver for a bit of a getaway. We just went for a few days. It was lots of fun. We wanted to do some shopping and go see a movie and take in a few restaurants that we'd seen and looked kind of interesting. This was not a trip that was about visiting. We do that also because our daughter Eilish has moved over there, and so we like to visit with her, but she and her husband were away that particular time, and so we just thought we'd go and have some fun. One of the things I always notice about a trip over to the mainland, for whatever reason, I notice the shifting demographics. There's a shift in the makeup of the people that I see as I travel. For example, when I get into downtown Vancouver, I find myself in the midst of a significant shift, and it's an ethnic one. I suddenly find myself surrounded by a greater variety of ethnicities and cultural groups than I would normally see here on Vancouver Island in general, or in Qualicum Beach in particular, because it's a bit more homogenous here, ethnically speaking. The lower mainland has a much richer mix. It's a more of a diverse cross-section of ethnicities than that we see here, and I find that kind of neat. There's another shift that I experienced. I don't even have to leave the island to experience this. I just have to go to Nanaimo, and I particularly see it when I get on the ferry, and that is the age shift. My fellow passengers on the ferry are usually, on average, of a significantly lower age than a good number of the people I'm surrounded by here in Qualicum Beach. I know that's shocking. Actually, when Tevis and I were on this last particular trip to Vancouver, we decided we would go and do brunch at a rather trendy restaurant that we'd heard about in Kitsilano. Turns out that they had this interesting menu. We're told the food was excellent, so we went to this place. It's called The Oakwood. It's on 4th if you're in the neighborhood. I'd recommend it. But after we'd ordered and we were waiting for our meal, I sort of had an opportunity to look around, and I could see that I was in the midst of another cultural shift. All the other patrons, well, they were young hipster guys in skinny jeans, all of whom seemed to have strategically placed tattoos that were, at least as far as I could discern, imported from somewhere in the Far East. And there were young hipster women all wearing basic black. Also with strategically placed tattoos, as best as I could see, containing meaningful if obscure sayings. And I looked at Tevis, and I said, you know, hon, I'm the oldest person in here. And she looked back at me and she said, and I'm the second oldest. Friends, if there was any doubt that I had that I was no longer Samuel but was now Eli, it evaporated in a second. Because, yeah, there was a time when I was with Samuel. But now I'm pretty much hanging out with Todd. No, I'm hanging out with Eli. And that's kind of sobering. We live in an odd place, there's no doubt about it. Qualicum Beach is something of a demographic mutant. You know, we perceive ourselves, and we rightly sell ourselves as a retirement community. And if you look at the figures that Statistics Canada produce, they reveal a somewhat unusual age spread in this town. It's unusual compared to the rest of the country. Now the last survey was done in 2011. And as of 2011, more than 45% of the population here were 65 years of age or older. And know that our national average is 15%. So our numbers of our working people are significantly less than the national average. And the numbers of children in school has shrunk alarmingly over the last decade. And I say alarmingly because I have some concerns about maintaining a healthy population balance in our community. Like, between 2006 and 2011, our school-age kids in Qualicum Beach dropped by 22%. To actually be a healthy retirement community requires that we have a population and an ability to support retired people. And so there's a kind of a tipping point at which that ability becomes compromised. It's hard to get someone to cut your grass or someone to pump your gas or someone to serve you in a store or someone to take your order in a restaurant if those folks who are doing that don't live in your community, because they will not be commuting here to do those jobs. They need to live here. And so there's a point where there's a balance, and then there's a point where that you'll find yourself in trouble. And actually, if you look at our official community plan, and I'll be linking that on our website this afternoon, but if you look at our official community plan, you can see kind of a subtext of concern, like our town is keeping an eye on this. And I'm concerned, as I hope you are. Obviously, I'm talking about this because I've been thinking about our text for today from 1 Samuel chapter 3. The story of the Lord revealing God's self to Samuel, and Samuel learning to recognize God's voice. And Samuel is a figure who's kind of a hinge point. He's the last of the Hebrew judges, and his presence marks a shift to the great prophets of Israel. And it's actually a story that begins not with Samuel, but it begins with his mother. His mother's name was Hannah. And we meet her right at the beginning of the first chapter of Samuel. She's married to someone named Elkanah. And Elkanah is also married to someone named Peninnah. And usually multiple marriages don't work out too well in the Bible. I'm not sure they work out too well anywhere, but that's a whole other sermon. Anyway, Peninnah had children, but Hannah was unable to conceive. And that caused Hannah no end of grief. And Elkanah tried to reassure her that he still loved her all the same, but she was just heartbroken by this. And so Hannah goes to the temple to pray, and she encounters the priest Eli. And he first thinks that she's intoxicated. Sees her lips moving and mumbling. And he mistakes her prayers for the mumblings and ramblings of a drunk person. Read the first chapter. It's a strange but interesting story. But eventually they get that sorted out. And she promises that she will dedicate a child to God. And so Eli offers a blessing over her. And the next thing you know, she's pregnant. And then she delivers a son. And she names the son Samuel, which is not an unusually surprising name, because it means God has heard. And when the time was right, she takes Samuel to the temple in Shiloh, and she leaves him there to serve God with Eli. And we also learn that every year when she and Elkanah go up to the temple to make a sacrifice, she would bring a priestly garment for the boy, a new one, so it would grow with him. And I find that a rather sweet and engaging image, because she always loved her boy Sam. In Jewish tradition, Samuel is thought to be 12 years old when these scriptural events occur, and that reminds me just a little bit of Jesus' trip to Jerusalem when he was 12. And you remember, that's the Why Wouldn't I Be in My Father's House episode. You find it later on in Luke chapter 2. And we're told that Samuel was serving in the temple under the guidance of Eli, and that for some reason, revelations from God, prophetic words and visions, were quite rare in the land. I'm not told why, but that's what it is. And, And we're also told that Eli is getting quite old. We're told specifically that his eyesight is failing. But we're also told that he's still got life in him. He's got some spring in his step. Some fire and life that God likes to use is present in Eli. And so where the story began today is both Eli and Samuel are resting. They are asleep. Eli is in his room, and Samuel is actually in the temple itself. He's not too far away from the Ark of the Covenant, and you'll remember that above the Ark is where God is supposed to dwell. And God speaks to Samuel, calls his name, and Samuel, thinking that it's Eli who's calling, sprints into the priest's chamber and says, "Here I am, what's up?" And Eli, I expect rather groggily, he says, "Not me, kid. Go back to sleep." And Samuel does. And then God calls him again. He says, "Samuel." And Samuel gets up again, goes into Eli's room and says, "I'm here. Why'd you call me?" And Eli responds by saying, "I didn't call you, Sam, so go lie down." He does. And of course, we read that God calls him a third time. "Samuel, Samuel." And for the third time, he goes into Eli's room and he says, "I'm here, Eli. What do you want?" And Eli sits up, you know, and then the penny drops. And he knows what's going on, so he puts on his glasses, he pops in his teeth. And he says, "Come here, boy. Hey, this isn't me calling. This is God. So here's what you do." And he explains to Samuel how he's supposed to respond. And of course, God does call Samuel again. And Samuel responds in the right way. And then God brings a message to Samuel. And it's a message that's really quite hard. God tells him that Eli's time is coming to an end because Eli's family have really gone off the rails. They're offending God, and he's not done enough to keep them in check. And so there's a changing of the guard taking place. And of course, the following morning, it's a really awkward moment. I mean, Eli, oh boy. Eli asks Samuel, he says, "So what happened? What did God say to you?" And Samuel, he's quite reluctant to respond, as you can imagine. This is hardly good news for his mentor, but Eli, he encourages him. He says, "You tell me. I need to know." And he takes the news with immense grace. He says, "Hey, this is God. And God will do what's best." I think that tells us something about Eli's heart. It tells us something about his faith, despite his failures. So here's the question that I find myself thinking is why Samuel and not Eli? Why did God move to Samuel? Eli had the experience. He was the one who actually knew that it was God speaking to Samuel. Why the youth Samuel and not the older, more knowledgeable, more well-trained Eli? I mean, why? Now, as a 61-year-old priest working in the temple, this story makes me just a little bit nervous. Because I'm pretty much with Eli these days. I am no longer Samuel. And there was a time when I was all Samuel all the time. I always thought there was something kind of bracing about this story. Young person whom God favored, changing of the guard, God reaching out to someone who seemed rather unlikely, 12-year-old boy, and directing them in this immensely powerful ministry that actually changed the course of the nation of Israel. And therefore, all of God's people. And while I wasn't as young as that, nor has God, from what I can see anyway, chosen to use me in such a profound way, I have always had the sense of being a part of a new movement in an established church. And you know, there's something bracing and rather energizing about that. And honestly, I still have some awareness of that. I by no means think that God's finished with me yet. But I am aware that there are some places that I need to let go of because God's got other people on the case. And at some point, somewhere, I guess I've been shifting into being with Eli. Someone who functions as a part of maintaining the establishment as opposed to being a means of change. And change, as I mentioned here last week, and I know I've mentioned here on a number of other occasions, change is the key element of the gospel, if not just for church life itself. But change is hard for us. The novelist Chuck Palahniuk is best known for his book, and which was turned into a movie called Fight Club. In another book he wrote called Lullaby, he wrote this, and I get this. Every generation wants to be the last. Every generation hates the next trend in music they can't understand. We hate to give up those reins of our culture, to find our own music playing in the elevators. The ballad for our revolution turned into background music for a television commercial. To find our generation's clothes and hair suddenly retro. It's a way of things, isn't it? Remember that phrase, the generation gap? Ironically, if you don't remember it, you're more likely Samuel than Eli. But back in the mid-1960s, as a result of the baby boom, about half of the population of North America was now under the age of 25. And that meant a massive shift in social dynamics. Young people, probably always have and always will, young people believed, of course, their parents were completely out of touch with anything that mattered. But all of a sudden, they had numbers. They had consumer power. They had cultural power. And so this notion of the generation gap bubbled up, and the rivalry between these age groups became especially pronounced in our society. But eventually there's always a shift in power, isn't there? Just like we see in this story. We're living in one of those times in the life of our denomination and our United Church. Our power, the influence we once knew, it's waning. That is true for most churches, if not all churches. But for a church that has for so long boasted in being the largest Protestant denomination in Canada, we said that with some pride. That's not easy to roll with. Bit of a come down. And sometimes we view this change in wholly negative ways. What happens is we view it as the end of things, or even as failure. And let me suggest to you, considering the nature of the church's task, which is sharing the good news of Jesus Christ in word and in deed, who, with all of humanity, we are to make disciples of the nations, all nations, with that task, it's only reasonable that until that ancient prayer, come soon, Lord Jesus, until that prayer is realized, then every generation of believers will have finished with a sense of things not being complete. And perhaps every generation concludes with just some sense of failure even. But if we insist on doing that, and if we insist on doing it the way we used to, or not doing it the way we used to is a kind of catastrophe. If we wonder if the whole project of the church has collapsed, then I suggest to you that we might be missing something really, really remarkable. Like seeing what's really going on, which is simply a change in direction. And that there is an invitation to be part of a God-led, Spirit-filled shift that will actually see a whole new generation becoming believers and apprentices of Jesus. Just as John the Baptist declared that he must become less so that Jesus could become greater, so it is that the church shifts and torches are passed and some things, not everything, but some things change. And so as someone who is now Eli, I wonder, perhaps even at times I worry, am I done? Is my age past? And if so, what's my purpose? And these are the really hard words. Am I any use anymore? But note what happens in this worrisome, but actually truly wonderful story. Eli and Samuel are together. They require each other, and God uses both of them. Samuel hears a voice, but he's uncertain. Eli knows this voice. And Eli is able to impart the gift of his experience, of his familiarity. I mean, Eli, he knows his way around the temple. He knows the practices that have fed and sustained. He knows the sound of God's voice. And Samuel is hearing God's choosing to speak and to call a new generation. And what a gift that is. And God is still speaking, and whether the word of the Lord is rare today or whether it's commonplace, we're welcome to discuss that. But our task is always one of discernment. Our task is listening and discerning. Now I opened this sermon by asking you whether this is a good news story or a bad news story. And it's tempting to answer that question by saying, well, it depends who you are. It depends who you identify with in this story of Eli and Samuel. But I would suggest to you that interpreting this text this way can be a bit misleading. I think this is just a good news story. Because God is speaking, and God is leading. And I would even dare to say that age might actually have sweet nothing to do with whether you're Samuel or Eli. But even if you are one or the other, they both have significant, critical roles to play. A church full of Eli's or a church with just Samuel's, it isn't enough. God needs both. God needs both. And that's all I have to say this morning. Amen.